Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Welcome to Meteorology Matters. Today, we're really digging into something significant, a major weather event, Hurricane Erin.
Absolutely. It's become this, well, catastrophic force incredibly quickly.
Yeah, it really has. So we're going to break down just how intense it is, where it's likely headed.
And maybe the most crucial part, we're going to unpack how hurricane winds actually cause devastation. It's maybe not what you'd instinctively think.
Exactly. It's more complex and honestly much more impactful than most people realize.
So our focus today is all on Hurricane Erin. As of this morning, it's really exploded into a Category 5 storm out there in the Caribbean. We're using the latest updates, of course, directly from the National Hurricane Center.
Right, getting the best picture we can.
And then we'll shift into some really eye-opening data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, as we often call them.
Oh, NOAA.
And this data reveals something quite surprising, this kind of non-linear reality about hurricane damage. It's potentially life-saving information.
It really is. Our mission for you today is pretty clear, give you a solid understanding of Erin, which is, well, a powerful case study right now.
Definitely.
But it's more than just Erin. We want to equip you with this critical knowledge about wind damage itself. Insights that, honestly, could change how you look at risk, how you prepare.
How you react to future storms, yeah.
It's about fundamentally shifting your perspective on what storm intensity actually means. Prepare for a bit of an aha moment, I think.
I think so, too. Let's dive in.
Okay, so where do we start? Erin's current status.
Yeah, let's anchor ourselves there.
Yeah.
Because it's quite something. As of today, Saturday, August 16th, 2025, Hurricane Erin is officially a catastrophic Category 5 on the Saffir-Simpson scale.
Category 5, the absolute top of the scale.
Exactly. It signifies, well, not just extreme strength, but the potential for truly widespread, overwhelming damage. The National Hurricane Center reports maximum sustained winds right now at an incredible 160 miles per hour.
160 mile hour, that's about, what, 255 kilometers per hour?
Roughly, yeah. I mean, try to picture that air moving faster than a high-speed train, just tearing through everything.
And underlining that power is the central pressure, right? It's plummeted.
Dramatically. Down to about 917 millibars. That's 27.08 inches of mercury.
And just to remind everyone, lower pressure means a stronger storm.
Precisely. It indicates this incredibly powerful vacuum effect at the core, just sucking air in and fueling those ferocious winds.
Okay, and where is it located right now?
It's currently about 105 miles or 170 kilometers north of Anguilla and roughly 270 kilometers north of Anguilla and roughly 275 miles, 375 kilometers east, northeast of San Juan, Puerto Rico.
And it's moving pretty steadily.
Yeah, moving west at 17 miles per hour, that's 28 kilometers per hour. It's not stationary, it's progressing. A fast-moving threat.
What's really striking, though, isn't just the current power, it's how fast it got this strong.
That is honestly the shocking part. This wasn't a monster yesterday. Erin went from a tropical storm to a Category 5 hurricane in, get this, just 24 hours.
24 hours, that's yeah. Almost unbelievable.
It really is. Think about that. One day. From a strong but, you know, manageable storm to the absolute peak of hurricane intensity.
Wow.
Director Mike Brennan down at the National Hurricane Center in Miami called it becoming a very powerful hurricane, which, looking at the numbers, feels like maybe an understatement.
Yeah, just a bit. And you said there was a period where it intensified even faster within that window.
That's right. If you look closer, in just a 9-hour span, the maximum sustained winds surged from 100 miles per hour.
Which is already a solid Category 2, capable of real damage.
Exactly. From 100 mile per hour up to an astounding 160 mile per hour. That's the jump into Category 5 territory.
So the winds more than doubled in just that one day period.
Essentially, yes. The velocity more than doubled. This is what we call rapid intensification.
Right. That's the technical term.
Yeah. And the official definition is when a tropical cyclone strengthens by at least 35 miles per hour in 24 hours. Erin, though, its wind strengthened by roughly 80 miles per hour in about a day.
80 miles per hour, so way beyond the standard definition.
Way beyond. It puts it at the very uncommon and frankly pretty terrifying end of these rapid intensification events. It's like watching a pond turn into a raging sea in mere hours.
So what allows that? What are the ingredients for such explosive growth?
Well, according to the meteorologist, it was sort of a perfect storm of conditions, if you will, a confluence of factors. First, and this is key, it moved over exceptionally warm ocean waters.
Right. Hurricanes need that warm water fuel, above 80 degrees Fahrenheit, usually.
Precisely. But it's not just the surface temp, it's the depth of that warm water, what we call ocean heat content.
Ah, okay. So it needs a deep reservoir of fuel.
Exactly. If it's just a shallow warm layer, the storm zone winds can churn it up, bringing cooler water to the surface and kind of putting the brakes on intensification. But Aaron found these deep pools of very warm water, a constant abundant fuel source.
Okay, warm water, deep warm water. What else?
The second critical factor was the almost complete lack of wind shear.
Wind shear, that's the change in wind speed or direction with height.
You got it. Imagine strong winds blowing at the top of the storm one way and the bottom another. High shear tears a storm apart. Or at least disrupts its structure, stops it from getting organized.
But Aaron didn't have that.
Very little. Low wind shear is like providing a perfectly calm vertical channel. It allowed Aaron to maintain its structure, that chimney effect, and just efficiently draw up all that energy from the warm ocean below. No disruption.
Makes sense. So warm, deep water, no wind shear. Anything else?
The third piece was simply its location, far from land.
So no land interference.
Right. Land can really mess with the storm circulation, introduce dry air, basically cut off its fuel. Aaron had this huge expanse of open, warm ocean all to itself. It could just develop in isolation.
And the Hurricane Center mentioned something about an outer eye wall.
Yeah, they noted the development of an outer eye wall.
Yeah.
That's often seen in really intense hurricanes like this. It usually suggests that this particular burst of rapid intensification might be nearing its end.
Okay, so maybe it's peaking.
It often means it's reached or is about to reach its peak intensity. But it also can precede what's called an eye wall replacement cycle, where the inner eye wall collapses and a new, larger one forms. That can cause fluctuations in strength.
Right. These things are complex internal processes.
Very complex.
Yeah.
But the outer eye wall formation is definitely a sign of a mature, extremely powerful system.
So putting Aaron in historical context, this is pretty significant.
Hugely significant. And frankly, a bit alarming. Okay, so it's the first Atlantic hurricane of 2025. That's notable.
And the first major hurricane, too, Category 3 or higher.
Correct. But here's the really standout part. Aaron is only the fifth Category 5 hurricane on record to form this early in the season.
Only the fifth ever, this early. Wow.
And get this. It's the only Category 5 we've ever observed outside the Gulf of Mexico or the Caribbean Sea this early in the year.
Really? So forming out in the open Atlantic as a Cat 5 this early is unprecedented.
Pretty much unprecedented in that specific location, yes. It makes Aaron a genuine outlier, a really rare and concerning event in the historical record, a stark reminder of how dynamic these systems can be.
Okay, so it's a Cat 5 monster right now. The big question everyone has is, what's next? Where is it going?
Right, the forecast. And the perhaps reassuring news, especially for folks on the U.S. mainland, is that the current forecast track keeps Aaron well offshore of the U.S. East Coast.
Okay, that is reassuring. So it's expected to stay out at sea as it moves north.
That's the current projection from the National Hurricane Center, yes. A collective sigh of relief there, for sure.
So what's the projected movement more specifically?
Well, it's expected to keep moving west through this afternoon. Then tonight, a turn toward the west-northwest is anticipated. It might slow down a bit in its forward speed.
Slowing down. That can sometimes be problematic near land, letting impacts linger.
It can, yeah. But then, heading into early next week, the forecast calls for a gradual but definite turn toward the north.
And its path relative to the islands.
The forecast track takes the core of Aaron just north of the northern Leeward Islands, the Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico over the weekend.
Just north? Of a Cat 5 still sounds pretty serious.
Oh, absolutely. Even if the eye stays offshore, being that close means significant impacts from the outer bands, the wind field, the waves.
Yeah.
You're definitely feeling the effects.
Okay, what about its intensity? Is it expected to stay a Cat 5?
The NHC intensity forecast suggests it might peak slightly higher, maybe around 165 miles per hour, before weakening starts.
So possibly even stronger briefly?
Possibly. But after the next 12 hours or so, the environment is expected to become a bit less favorable. We're looking at increasing wind shear from the northwest.
Ah, that shear again.
Yep, and potentially some dry air getting pulled into the storm.
Mm.
Those factors should lead to a gradual weakening trend over the next, say, 72 hours.
Gradually weakening. But you mentioned those eyewall replacement cycles.
Exactly. Superimposed on that weakening trend, you'll likely see fluctuations because of eyewall replacement cycles. The inner wall collapses. A new outer one forms and contracts. They can temporarily weaken it, or sometimes it re-strengthens afterward, often emerging larger.
So it's not necessarily a smooth decline.
Not at all. It's a very dynamic process in these intense storms.
And what happens further out, beyond 72 hours?
Beyond the 72 to 96 hour mark, Aaron is expected to move further north into the westerlies. That's where the wind shear gets much stronger.
And that should weaken it more significantly.
Yes, that increased shear will likely lead to a faster weakening trend. It could drop below major hurricane status by then.
But there's a catch, right?
About its size.
The huge catch. Even as the peak intensity might decrease, the forecast models strongly agree that the storm's overall size will increase significantly.
Grow larger. How much larger?
The forecast suggests its tropical storm force wind field, the area experiencing winds of 39 miles per hour or more, could double or even triple in size by the middle of next week. Wow, triple in size. So even a weaker Aaron, intensity-wise, could have a much bigger footprint.
Exactly. A massive footprint. And that means widespread rough seas, dangerous surf, and potential impacts felt far, far from the center, across a huge swath of the Western Atlantic.
Okay, let's break down those specific impacts then. What are the immediate hazards? Rainfall first.
Right, rainfall. Heavy rain is expected to continue through Sunday across the northern Leeward Islands, the Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico.
How much are we talking?
Generally 2 to 4 inches, but some isolated spots could see up to 6 inches.
And 2 to 4 inches maybe doesn't sound like a huge amount, but on those islands.
Exactly. Given the mountainous terrain, steep slopes, and populated coastlines, that amount of rain can quickly lead to dangerous runoff. Flash flooding is a major concern, especially in urban areas where drainage gets overwhelmed.
And landslides, mudslides, too.
Definitely. We've seen it time and again. Water can be just as destructive, if not more so, than the wind in these situations. Mm-hmm. It can trigger landslides that cut off roads, isolate communities, destroy homes.
Okay, so rainfall is a major concern. What about the wind itself?
Well, the truly catastrophic hurricane-force winds are forecast to stay mostly offshore, thankfully. But tropical storm conditions, sustained winds 39 to 73 mile per hour, are possible in the areas under watch, specifically St. Martin, St. Barts, St. Martin, through today.
And gusts will be stronger.
Oh, yeah. Tropical storm force gusts are likely in the outer rain bands hitting parts of the northern Leewards tonight and then spreading to the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico later today and through Sunday.
Anywhere else.
Those gusts are also possible, maybe less frequent, over the Turks and Caicos in the southeast Bahamas as Aaron moves northwestward.
How large is the wind field right now?
Currently, the hurricane force winds extend out only about 30 miles from the center. It's a relatively tight core for a Cat 5.
Okay, relatively small core of extreme winds.
But the tropical storm force winds extend outward up to 140 miles, mostly north of the center. So that shows you the broader reach, even now.
And that reach is expected to grow, as you said.
Dramatically. Which leads us to the next big hazard. The surf and rip currents.
Ah, yeah. Always dangerous, even far from the storm.
And with a storm this powerful and large, they're expected to be life-threatening. The swells generated by Aaron will pound the coasts of the northern Leewards, Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, Hispaniola, Turks and Caicos through the weekend.
And those swells travel far, don't they?
Very far. This is critical. Those dangerous swells will then spread north and west, reaching the Bahamas, Bermuda, and eventually the entire U.S. East Coast early next week. That includes Florida's Atlantic beaches.
So even if Aaron is hundreds of miles away, the beaches here could see dangerous conditions.
Absolutely. You could have beautiful sunny skies on the beach, but the ocean could be incredibly treacherous due to these long-period swells creating powerful invisible rip currents.
The message is clear then. Respect the water. Pay attention to warnings.
Absolutely. Red flags mean stay out. Even strong swimmers can be easily swept away. It's just not worth the risk.
What about Bermuda specifically? They seem potentially closer to the track later on.
Yes. Interests in Bermuda definitely need to keep monitoring Aaron very closely. As it makes that northward turn and expands, there's a definite risk of strong winds, heavy rain, and that dangerous high surf hitting Bermuda by the middle of next week.
Okay. Anything else brewing out there? You mentioned the Hurricane Center monitors other things.
They are watching a weak area of low pressure off the coast of North Carolina. But the chances of it developing are pretty low right now, only about 10% over the next few days.
Why so low?
Unfavorable conditions expected, mainly increasing wind shear moving into that area by Monday. So while they track everything, Aaron is absolutely the main event, the dominant feature demanding all the attention.
Right. It completely dominates the Atlantic basin right now.
And its sheer power is what really forces us to confront what that power means for damage, for impact.
Which brings us perfectly to that insight about wind damage we talked about earlier. Because understanding Aaron's intensity is one thing, but understanding how that intensity translates to destruction is another level.
Exactly. This is where we need to adjust our intuition. The Saffir-Simpson scale, categories 1 through 5, based on wind speed, it's useful. Gives us a quick reference.
And it gives those general damage descriptions, you know, damage to roof shingles for a Cat 1, catastrophic damage for a Cat 5.
Right. And those descriptions are helpful for context. But the scale itself doesn't fully convey the exponential jump in destructive potential between categories.
This is a common misunderstanding, isn't it? People think linearly.
Very much so. You hear it goes from Cat 1 to Cat 2, you might think, okay, a bit more damage. Or if the wind speed doubles, say, 75 mile per hour to 150 mile per hour.
You instinctively think, okay, double the wind, maybe double the damage.
Right. Or maybe even quadruple if you know a little physics about wind pressure being related to velocity squared.
Ah, okay. So some might get that far.
Some might. But the reality, based on the data crunched by NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is far more dramatic. This is the real aha moment. It's not linear, not even simply squared.
It's like earthquake scales or sound decibels, not a simple step-by-step increase.
Precisely. Hurricane damage potential increases logarithmically, or you could even describe it as exponentially. The core physics is that wind force goes up with the square of the wind speed. Double the speed, 4 times the pressure.
Okay, 4 times the pressure. That's already significant.
It is, but that's just the start. Because when you factor in everything else a hurricane brings, the storm surge, the flooding from torrential rain, the tornadoes that can spin up in the bands.
All those other destructive elements.
They compound it. And when researchers looked at normalized cost data, adjusting for inflation, population changes, wealth over decades to compare storms fairly whole, they found something staggering.
What did they find?
An 1/8 power relationship between wind speed increases and the resulting damage costs. Category to category.
1/8 power. That sounds astronomical. Can you break that down?
It is hard to grasp intuitively. Let's use that example. Doubling the wind speed from 75 mile per hour, a minimal Cat 1, to 150 mile per hour, a strong Cat 4.
Right. Double the speed.
It does not mean double the damage. It doesn't even mean 4 times the damage from the pressure increase. Based on that 1/8 power relationship found in the damage data, it means potentially 256 times the damage.
256 times.
256 times. It's 2 raised to the power of 8. 2 by 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 2. That is the mind-blowing reality of how destruction potential escalates with wind speed.
Why such a huge jump? Is it just things breaking more spectacularly?
It's about thresholds and cascading failures. That quadrupled wind pressure pushes structures beyond just cosmetic damage. It finds weaknesses. A roof panel fails, letting wind inside the structure, pressurizing it like a balloon.
Ah, and then it can blow walls outward.
Exactly. Or water pours in, ruining interiors, adding weight. One failure leads to another, leading to total structural collapse much more easily. It's not just more damage. It's a different kind of failure mode.
That makes sense. The historical data must back this up strongly.
Absolutely starkly. Consider this. Major hurricanes, category 3, 4, and 5, they only make up about 24% less than 1/4 of all hurricanes that make landfall.
Okay, a minority of storms.
But that minority, that 24%, is responsible for over 85% of all hurricane-related damage costs.
85% of the damage from less than 1/4 of the storms.
Yes. That statistic alone powerfully shows you this isn't a linear scale of destruction. The damage is overwhelmingly concentrated in those stronger storms. It's the difference between repairs and total ruin.
And it's not just the jump between categories, right? Even smaller increases matter disproportionately.
Hugely. Let's look within categories or just small jumps. A 95 mile per hour hurricane, still a Cat 1, can cause nearly 7 times the damage of a 75 mile per hour hurricane.
7 times the damage from just a 20 mile per hour increase.
Exactly. That's not intuitive at all. It highlights how sensitive damage potential is to wind speed increases, especially as speeds get higher.
What about around the Cat 2 threshold?
Okay, think about going from 100 mile per hour, that's a Cat 2, maybe a 10x damage multiplier compared to our 75 mile per hour baseline, to 110 mile per hour, still a Cat 2.
Right, just 10 mile per hour faster.
That 10 mile per hour increase more than doubles the potential damage again, jumping the multiplier to around 21x.
Wow. So even within the same category number, a small wind speed bump means significantly more destruction potential.
Immense consequences. It's the difference between maybe losing your roof shingles and losing the entire roof structure.
So bringing it back to Hurricane Erin right now at 160 Malaplier, what's its damage multiplier look like?
For Erin at 160 Malaplier, we're talking a potential damage multiplier of around 429 times compared to that baseline 75 Malaplier storm.
429 times. That number really puts the catastrophic in Category 5 into perspective.
It absolutely does. It's not just strong, it's exponentially destructive. It pushes well beyond what most standard construction is designed for. It's a truly sobering number that underscores why these storms demand such respect and preparation.
So the absolute key takeaway here for everyone listening
is that because damage potential increases so dramatically, logarithmically, exponentially, you should never be complacent about wind speed increases.
Don't hear it strengthened by 10 Malaplier and think, oh, that's not much.
Exactly. A 10 or 15 Malaplier jump, especially at higher wind speeds, doesn't mean marginally more damage. It means disproportionately, potentially, exponentially, more destructive capability.
Our intuition about wind force just doesn't work well here.
It really doesn't. It escalates far faster than we'd naturally assume. And grasping that is absolutely vital for safety, for preparedness, for deciding when to evacuate. It fundamentally changes how you should assess the risk.
Okay, so let's recap what we've covered in this Meteorology Matters discussion. We looked at Hurricane Erin's really stunning and rapid intensification to a Category 5 storm.
Yeah, a truly powerful system. We tracked its forecast path, noting the current expectation is for it to stay offshore the U.S. East Coast, but still bring significant hazards like heavy rain, wind, and especially dangerous surf to the islands and coastal waters further south and eventually up the coast.
And crucially, we dove into that non-intuitive reality of hurricane wind damage, how it ramps up exponentially, not linearly. That 256x multiplier for doubling wind speed, the 85% of damage from major storms, that's the core insight.
It really is. It's a powerful reminder that while we track the storms with the brilliant work from the National Hurricane Center, understanding the science behind the destructive force is just as critical.
And like we said, critical thinking is key. Recognizing this nonlinear damage is a perfect example.
Absolutely. We really hope this look at Erin, and especially the damage potential concept, gives you a renewed appreciation for the power involved and underscores why preparation based on real understanding is so incredibly important.
Cannot emphasize that enough. Preparation saves lives. Get your kits ready well in advance. Know your evacuation zone. And if officials say go, you go. Don't hesitate.
Don't wait. And maybe a final thought to leave you with. If these seemingly small wind increases can multiply damage so drastically, what does that really imply for how we need to approach building codes, infrastructure resilience, even forecasting itself, especially in the context of a changing climate, potentially bringing stronger storms?
That's a heavy question. It suggests maybe our current ways of thinking about categories and risk aren't fully capturing the escalating danger.
It certainly raises profound questions about how we perceive and respond to these immense natural forces, pushing us to think beyond simple numbers and grasp the true exponential threat.
Definitely food for thought. Now, if you want to keep learning and stay updated on meteorology,
you should definitely follow meteorologist Rob Jones.
You can find him on Instagram. His handle is @meteorologist. He's also on TikTok @TVMeteorologist.
And for more content like this, more hurricane updates, subscribe to Rob Jones Hurricane on YouTube. You'll find the full Meteorology Matters podcast playlist there, too.
Great resources. Well, thank you for joining us for this really essential discussion on Meteorology Matters.
Thanks for listening. Stay safe out there.